Welcome to Cannon Crew, a weekly podcast discussing the Charleston Battery. Your host, Granite, will be joined by other defenders of the fleet from the black and yellow supporters section, and together they will help fortify and conquer. They are the Cannon Crew.
Welcome to the Cannon Crew. I am Granite, and I'm joined here by a couple of the co-hosts. Ryan, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
Patrick.
What's up, everybody?
And Matt.
Hello, hello.
So let's talk about our Eastern Conference rivals. It was a cold and rainy and windy night up in Rhode Island.
I thought we did pretty decent. Like I say, going into this game, it was going to be important to protect our defensive side and focus on keeping that clean sheet on the road and going consecutive games, keeping that clean sheet. And I thought we handled that.
Yeah, we played a game.
Absolute snooze fest. I stayed up till 5 a.m. for that.
So let's talk about the snooze fest up in Rhode Island. It was wet and rainy on turf. The Bulldogs, I'm not going to mention the stadium and how crap it is, and they probably shouldn't let expansion teams open up a stadium when they can't even record a video other than on somebody's GoPro in the rain. Maybe put an umbrella over the GoPro, maybe? I don't know. But anyways, the screen that around the edge, they spent a lot of money on that. They probably should spend it on something else. So let's talk about some of the changes for the lineup. Ryan, you were talking about Ikaza coming on and starting in place of Allen. What do you think of that change?
I thought it was a good change going into this weekend on the road. But again, it kind of leaves you wondering where that's going to settle for the lineup coming into Tuesday's home game against Louisville. You know, is he going to rest more players for that game, or how is that going to affect that lineup for that quick turnaround this week?
Boris.
I talked about it last time. When were we going to see him finally get the nod for a start? Like, our midfield's so damn strong, and this is what we look to every week. Like, who's going to finally break through? Not necessarily break through, but like, who's getting their opportunity this week? And we saw it. So Torres is getting the full start. He's not coming off the bench at 60 minutes, 70 minutes. He was a guy that we saw play. I mean, there's not much you can say about it. We'll talk a little bit more about him, but I think he was trying to play a little out of his comfort zone just for the opportunity to keep his place in the team that is very competitive in his position. But I think it's well deserved that he finally got the start. I'll say that. Like, he deserved to finally get the nod, start the game, and see a full first half and try and shoot a little bit on
Torres. Did he come in for Rodriguez? Because Rodriguez wasn't even lineup, was he?
He wasn't. I don't know. I mean, we have a very short week this week, too. So maybe it's just something we're looking to. Obviously, we touched on this the week before and the week before that. But like, such a small squad, maybe we can rotate it a little bit more. And the guys are going to get their minutes, knowing that next week, hey, we're going to go back to someone else may play this position. But if you play your way in, have a man-of-the-match performance in this game, maybe you keep it. But I don't know. I mean, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. Like, our midfield's the strongest position. We have to rotate some of these guys, keep them a little happy with some starts.
Yeah, maybe it is just rotational, bring him in there. He did play a full 90, hit some good shots in there. Like I said, we'll talk about him in a little bit. There was no other lineup changes going there. So, Matt, what did you anticipate this game was going to look like going into it?
I thought it would be tough. Rhode Island are a team that they want to prove something. Again, obviously, playing on a high school field, they have a lot stacked against them. So they want to show up and show that maybe they can step up and play university level, college level. And I feel they really did play their game the best. And what was their game? Get a 0-0. I don't think they were playing to win. And honestly, I think their coach is going to be very happy with this performance.
Going in, I thought it was going to be a similar fight to Miami. I didn't think it was going to be a fight for us defensively, as much as it actually turned out to be. They actually had quite a few chances where Adam Grinwis had to make amazing saves. But attacking-wise, we did struggle a bit more than I thought we would. But I still thought we were going to get the tie at the end of the day. Which was good, but got to get back on the winning streak.
Honestly, I thought we were just going to see a repeat of the past couple weeks. We're just going to pepper the goal, get some goals in there. I mean, seeing Rhode Island play, they're not the most break forward team in the USL championship. Not that a lot of people have film on them, but I really thought we were just going to play our game and kind of pin them back. And they were just going to let us control the ball majority and kind of get a bunch of shots on goal. And maybe we can get a breakthrough at some point.
I anticipated us to be a little more like we've been doing, trying to stay in possession of the ball, building out of the back. And they seemed to really stymie us with that and didn't have the fluidity of play that we've had in the past. Ryan, I think you mentioned something about you thought it was going to be a tough slug going through. Do you think the weather had anything to do with it?
Almost definitely. And I think we mentioned it before going into this match and definitely during it. It's a rainy night in Rhode Island. And that definitely plays a factor with our players too, mentality-wise. When it's a cold, rainy night, miserable, no fans up there, and again, you're playing on a high school field, not really where you want to be on a typical Saturday night, but it's a hard place to play at.
Matt, so you watch it until 5 o'clock in the morning because you're on that Greenwich Mean Time. Do you think the weather caused any mayhem for the Battery?
Oh, absolutely. I can just tell you out here, I've watched a few lower league games, comparable level to the Battery. And the second you get rain, you never know what's going to happen. Then you factor in the cold. I'd like to highlight, where is Charleston geographically? What's the weather like? I mean, it's the beautiful South. It's warm. And when it rains to the point where you can't even play. So these players aren't used to, you know, a slippery condition. And maybe that's something where maybe next training, maybe the sprinklers should be turned on. Maybe get the players used to passing the ball on, again, a high school level field. I know Oceanside, another local team, they have a turf field. Maybe we can get some hoses down there, get it all slippery and train for these different circumstances.
That's an interesting point because it also was on turf, which kind of speeds up the play of the ball. We didn't play it to our advantage. There was a shot, I think, by Torres. We at the Edmunds Oast were watching the match. Somebody mentioned that he just needs to skip that off the surface the way it looks, so slimy and wet. And maybe we need to somehow do some practice, like you said, on turf fields. So like we were talking about our normal game plan in possession, and there were some differences, and we all talked about this earlier, about our passing wasn't quite the quality passing we're used to. Patrick, I think you were talking about how a lot of the passing was in our half and it wasn't even making it into the final third.
Yeah. I mean, what we've grown accustomed to in these past like 4 or 5 games is big distribution out to the wings, and the wings kind of play it back in, and then we kick it around with our center mids and we kick it back out to them. And that's where our play creation comes from. That's a big part of the Charleston Battery. And just looking at this game, we've gone from what, 20 shots, 18 shots, 20 shots to this game only having 11. It's almost like, I don't want to take away from the Battery because I feel like we go in with the same game plan every time, but I will just go ahead and say Rhode Island, I think, had a better game plan and executed it for the team that they knew we were going to be. So I don't think we had those chance creations on the outside. We didn't whip enough balls in to even get a shot off. And they kind of just swarmed the ball as soon as we were in a dangerous position.
Yeah, and they caused a lot of clearances. So we had 17 clearances and 13, Rhode Island had 13. And normally, so that we're very lopsided the other way around. The other teams usually were putting so much pressure on them that they're having to complete a lot of clearances out of the back where we normally don't because we're building out of the back. So, but this time it was a little bit lopsided. So if that was their game plan, then I think it worked well for them. Not necessarily to our advantage to score any goals. Matt, what do you think?
Well, touching back on the distribution, when I was last here, I talked about our two center backs, Palma and Smith, and how long balls is and has been something that they're struggling with this season. And I'd like to say, Ruggle is still here. We're looking at Palma attempting 10 long balls and only hitting 4. That's a 40% accuracy rate. That is extremely poor, especially for a side that, again, the Battery wants to be on the ball. The Battery wants to be creative. It wants to be the dominant force on the field, and you need your center back to step up for that. And I don't think Palma did. And then switching quickly to Smith, Smith had 57%, but again, only 4 out of 7. So we're talking 8 accurate long balls from our 2 center backs combined. That, to me, I still very poor.
I think the weather combined with their style of play from Rhode Island, that really caused some mayhem for us all across the field.
It's almost like we went back to how we played against North Carolina FC in the beginning of the season. You know, open it up, playing against an opponent we haven't faced before. We've got high nerves. We're on the road for it. Then you bring in the factor alone of the weather itself, cold, rainy, it's miserable. It's not looking the best for the battery at that moment. And just couldn't get the shots off, just like in the North Carolina game. There was a lot of similarities between those two games. And you look at it and it's like, okay, you can see the battery just kind of fell back into what we had already done in the previous games and earlier in the season. And it's like, okay, can we now bounce back and get back up onto that winning track, get the goals back in, or do we have to go through this whole process again? It's almost like a cycle reset. Do we have to reset the whole cycle, or can we get right back onto the
train? I mean, it felt weird, right? This is the first game we're looking at that we didn't have the majority of the ball. It almost felt like it was 50-50. Like, we didn't control our own narrative, right?
Yeah.
But because we were, I think, what, New Mexico was the only game we were in the 50%, and we dominated that game. So there wasn't, like, giving possession away really mattered because we were capitalizing on chances. But it felt like this game, it was kind of a free-for-all. Like, I think their press just kind of slowed us out. They played what we thought the teams we'd face, who had kind of backed off of us and let us play our game a little bit. They just hit us in the mouth, and we weren't expecting it at all. And you can see it, because you saw a lot of players just take it on personally and try and make a breakthrough instead of trying to play the team ball that we've grown accustomed to seeing these past 4 or 5 weeks, right?
Now, do you think that some players kind of took Rhode Island as an easy opponent, considering that Tampa has been struggling all year, came in to Rhode Island last week, struggled against them early on, tied them 1-1, and then it was around, what, 60th, 70th minute, bam, they got 3 more goals in. They go on and cruise on to win 4-1, making it look like an easy game. And it's almost like the battery kind of thought it was going to, the win should have been handed to them in a way. Not saying that we're that cocky of a team or anything, but it's almost like we kind of felt like the game should have already been given to us without
it's almost like we expected it, right? We're sitting there being like not to what you're saying, like cocky about it, but like we're not respecting their team enough, because they did play the hell of a game against the Rowdy for the first half.
Exactly.
Like, it was a 1-1 game. It only fell apart at the very end. So I think we just didn't respect them enough because we saw a scoreline, more so than respect the way that they can actually break down a high-scoring goal.
What do you think, it's a matter of didn't respect them enough, or is it a matter that we didn't have a plan if they were disrupting us, how to change how we were playing our game state and maybe work it out a little bit differently other than just keep pounding away trying to do the same thing over and over and over again, which is kind of that insanity kind of
thing. Yeah, I don't think it's like a non-respect thing, right?
Absolutely. I think you look at the teams that have really put up a fight with the battery this season. It looks to me as their game plan has been, the battery's going to play their way. Let's just make them uncomfortable. What's the biggest way that we can make them uncomfortable on the ball? Because again, we talk about our midfield being our strongest asset, which it absolutely is. That means that we're good on the ball. And for teams that are good on the ball, how do you disrupt that? How do you counter that? You get them off the ball as much as you can. And you look at the fouls breaking up the play. You look at the heavy press. I mean, I think Rhode Island, they clearly went into this game with a more complete game plan than the battery. And I think this was a winnable match. And Rhode Island did their part to make it as difficult as possible. And I think this is something to keep an eye on for the rest of the season, where Now I think a lot of teams are going to be looking at the Battery as, hold on, if we play physical, they can't compete with us. And that's very problematic.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is not a game that we look at to define our season, but something that's just like, hey, what if I start a different person in this central midfielder role? Is he going to turn up and make a difference for us? Because we're coming back home, and we're going to come back home, and then we're going on the road for another two games. So is this just something that's like the coach wants to give Juan Torres a shot? And are you going to step up to be a playmaker? Because obviously where he came from had minimal minutes. He never really got a huge look. I know there's been talk about like the language barrier and trying to fit in a little bit more, but we have a lot of South American players on our team to communicate. Is this just something the coach is trying to do a little different for a game where he knows he can pick the same team as last game and stick with something we did that won and won well? Is he just trying to switch it up and be like, I want to see if a guy is going to step up, prove that he needs to be picked week in, week out, and give everyone something to think about for week to week?
And I think that's fair, because Rhode Island, if you look at where they are on the table, they're not the strongest team, but apparently last Saturday night, they were stronger than, or just as strong as we were. But I think you might have a point there. Does Torres, is he kind of a like for Allen coming off and replacing Allen in that position? Or Rodriguez? Is he the same type of player? Does it really change us, or are we just switching
out?
Right,
I want to hear you more on this, because I feel like you and I have different opinions on Torres at this point. Where do you think he goes in the lineup?
That's the problem, is who do you replace, right? I think Rodriguez might be injured. I don't know that for sure. And that's the reason why he got the start. I think if Rodriguez was not injured, then Torres is sitting on the bench coming at 60 minutes.
I think personally, he needs to be playing off the right. He was a winger in his youth days. That's where I think he's excelled in previous matches for his former club, Milliornes, or I believe I butchered that. But I think coming off the right is where he'll be his best, especially for the Battery in a more physical league. Throw him out wide.
So this is just a general question. Does anyone feel, because I watched that game and I didn't think he killed our forward play, but I think he was taking too much on to start shooting the ball way too early, because everything I saw from him was outside the box. What do you guys feel like that kind of killed our offensive play? Because we're not very much like just take a long shot and do it, but he is definitely used to having these longer shots and it ricochets off in the later minutes and someone kind of cleans it up and scores a goal. I don't know. This is something I'm just curious, because I don't know if this is his strong suit to play all 90 minutes in this.
Well, I think with his shot selection, I think you're right, because a lot of his shots are coming out outside the penalty area, 20 yards, 21 yards. The first two were goals were scored off of were rockets. It seemed like he wasn't making the connection that he needed to really put some heat behind the ball. And the one he was actually in the box, I don't know. Does he have a right foot? I don't know. Cause he should have probably taken it right footed and put it in the far post, but he went with his left foot, which was kind of blocked by the defender. But at least he's shooting. And I don't think they're low percentage shots. I think they're great shot selection. It wasn't connecting Saturday night like it was earlier.
I mean, if this is week one, we're sitting there being like, someone's creating chances. But I think we've seen enough from our team where it's almost a hindrance of like, hey, please don't take that shot. We can recycle the ball out and maybe get a better opportunity off.
I also think it's key to look into players' history. I think you look, you know, training with Banfield in Argentina, then to Corinthians in Brazil, then moving up to Milliarnos in his home country of Colombia, and now, you know, stepping out of South America, making honestly a massive culture change and shift to Charleston and the Battery. You have to look at the play styles of those teams, the play styles of those countries and those leagues, and how does that then fit in with the Battery and how they're trying to play. When I look at this player, I look instantly when the Battery signed him, I was excited. I sat there and I said, wow, this is an impressive signing to be able to pull a young Colombian talent to the USL instead of, for me, someone who should have been MLS bound. And I also look at his play style. I look at his great attributes. We want to talk about long shots. We want to talk about being a threat outside of the box. I completely agree. He hindered the attack playing in a 10. As a 10, he made it very difficult to progress the ball forward because instead of looking for the pass, he picked his head up and was looking for the shot. But isn't that exactly what you ask for a goal-minded winger? I mean, we look at big teams in any league in the world, they want a winger who can score. And I think for a 23-year-old Colombian to walk into his first start and say, it's cold, it's rainy, this is a temperament that I'm not used to, I'm, you know, playing on a pitch that is even poorer than any pitch I've played on back home, and I'm going to try and grab this game and get the winner, I think that's something to be commended.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, from the role we've seen from him, and obviously you can't predict the game, but, like, would we have better suited for him coming on for the last 30 minutes post that red card? Because this is the time that we usually see him come on and create a chance for us and create a goal.
I think, unfortunately, that night, you know, him coming in the 60th minute would have benefited us the most in that game. And that's something we just take and we learn from it. But I do think that that is a good fit for him right now at this time, is coming on that 60th minute. And when that red card came in, he would have just shot us over the roof and gotten us that goal, I think, if he would have came on the field.
Let's talk about that sending off. I think it was number 28 from Rhode Island, McGuinn. So, or McGlynn, I don't know what it is. It's McDonald's. Somebody that I don't want to talk about anymore. He had a little attitude going in. His first yellow, his first caution was at 28 minutes. And it was kind of just a nasty foul. I come in almost two-footed on Segbers. And then Malloy got the ball. And he just, I don't know what he was trying to do. I've never seen a tackle like that where he's just trying to hook him and caught Malloy and took him out. The back of his heel laying on the ground. It's kind of ugly. And then the other part I didn't appreciate is when teams start surrounding officials and getting in their face about why he shouldn't give a caution. And I think Rhode Island did it there. They definitely did it later on. Do you have any thoughts on the first foul that he received the caution on?
Definitely. I mean, the first card, he slide tackled, missed, got up, and just went into another slide tackle. Almost like, oh, what the hell? Like, I missed that one. I'm going to get it back, even if I get a guy on this one. It wasn't no more than just, I messed up the first one, and I need to prove that I'm going to do something on the second one. It was a bad foul. It deserved a yellow. So, like, it was ridiculous. I thought the first slide tackle on Segbers was so, like, uncontrollable. It was like, why are you even sliding on him on this play? And he just stood up and did it again.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there's another point to be made here about him. To me, those challenges would write him off a little bit if this was a younger, more inexperienced midfielder. But we're talking about a 25-year-old center back. He primarily plays as a center back. So again, this is just beefing up that midfield. Those are challenges that I don't think many players would make. And again, I think that goes back to, I feel that they were told to be disruptive. They were told put in heavy challenges because of the lack of physicality in this Battery side.
Ryan, do you think the red card was warranted? Because obviously that would have been a second yellow, which he got.
Yeah, I do. I do think it was warranted. And the thing that I think the Battery missed on in that game was taking advantage of us being on the road and having a referee calling fouls and giving cards early. I mean, first half, there was three yellow cards given to Rhode Island. Get after those players, get after the defenders who are already on yellow cards and make them mess up in the rain. That's the easiest thing to get done, is to get a person who's already on a yellow, get them red carded in a rainy game. It's going to happen. I mean, it's just, you slip, you fall, leg comes up in the air, you go down, boom, it's a red card. It just happens, you know, as easy as it could be and as dumb as it looks, you know, but that's where I think they really messed up on.
Yeah, I was Edmund Zos, and I was talking to Mike from Regiment, and he said, and right at halftime, he said, we're not going to finish with 22 men on the field. And so the prediction comes, right? So,
I mean, I like it. Like, as a coach, you have to kind of switch your game plan, attack that, because you see it. If someone gets a yellow card, like 10 minutes in, say an outside back, you're going to attack that wing back the entire game because it's up to him not to make a big mistake. And I don't think we just like pressured them enough off of that. I thought the red card was like the guy was, I don't know what he was thinking on it, but he definitely just went in trying to, I mean, you can see it, just a shoulder in, clobber the guy. I don't know what the hell he was thinking on the play because he had no chance of going for the ball. But
I think this goes back to when you talk about game plan, when you talk about a shift, having, like we said, three players on a yellow card in the first half. I would like to see someone else's opinion on this. Do you think that the battery are being a little too stubborn in trying to persist with the same game plan, whereas other teams are willing to adapt to us? Should we be trying to, counter predict their disruptiveness and therefore change the lineup, maybe even change formation, throw in a little bit more beef in the midfield that way?
I mean, is this where your assistant coaches kind of shine in these moments, right? Like they should be the ones you rely on for this. Kind of, hey, you scouted this part, kind of what you said, Matt, of like, I wasn't thinking this. I want to stick to my game plan as the head coach and it's working well. But if we have to go to it, I have my assistant coaches on this bench that can kind of lead me in good direction of like what would be tactically that we talked about. You saw this week leading up to it.
Yeah, man, I would like to jump on what you were talking about. First off, if we're passing the ball well, we're passing quickly, we kind of get around that type of fouling and trying to disrupt us. We weren't passing the ball well, and maybe we need to make a change earlier to maybe beef up that midfield so we can absorb that type of disruptive play. This guy goes in on DeSantos and doesn't even try the ball. And I don't know if he hit him in the head or whatever. It was just ridiculous. Kind of, I don't want to say it was sloppy play. It's just kind of thuggerish. And apparently that's how the guy wants to play. Maybe he needs to stay in Rhode Island and play up on an expansion team.
You can say lazy.
Lazy. And he's hitting DeSantos. That's my boy, right? Yeah. So don't be hitting DeSantos.
I actually have a different opinion to it. I think that he set the tone. And he was setting the tone with his challenges. He was setting the tone of, welcome to our home. We're not here to mess around. And you look at what it takes to be an expansion team, what it takes to be a player. Again, he came from Hartford. It's not like he doesn't have a career. He chose to go to Rhode Island for the challenge that it's going to impose. And I think, again, then switching back, we should know this. We should know that there are players who are willing to make a difference for a Rhode Island team to stamp their name in the history of this franchise by beating a battery team that just made the finals this past season.
Well, the cool thing was they didn't beat us. And I think a lot of that went to the man of the match, who I'll also call the man of the match, is Grinny. He was out there coming out after the ball, took one for the team there when their striker come at him and he didn't let up. He head down, grabbed the ball, even though he was going to take a hit, and several other times.
Yeah, Adam Grinny, man of the match right here, absolutely explosive in the back. And this is the game we've been wanting to see from him. This is a game where throughout the entire 90 minutes, he was fully tuned in. He was locked in and focused. I don't think he really made a mistake out there on the field. And if he did, he cleaned it up very well. And going forward, to put your whole body on the line, have the bravery and have your whole team to witness it and to come back from it is, you know, just speaks volume to the type of player he is and going forward. And he's definitely exciting to watch.
Yeah, I think he killed it. Like, as much as we gave him flack the week before and the week before that, I think this was his coming out performance. Like, he didn't have the best defensive line in front of you, because there were mistakes that were made. They had shots, let it be one shot on goal, but he still had to be relevant in this game. It wasn't sit back and kind of watch the rest of your team pass the ball around 70% possession up top and just get a bunch of shots on goal. Like, he was very relevant in this, where I think he kind of made his name as, hey, I made a mistake, I'm over it, and I'm going to keep us in games when we need it.
And he did. There was one, we were just kind of disorganized at the back, and I think they brought it into the box and took a shot, and it came off the woodwork above him. At first, I was like, oh, what was Grinny thinking? And then when I watched the replay, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He was getting low, covering the near post, did a fantastic job, and it just, you can't cover all those angles going up high like it. What he was doing, the guy knew he couldn't go low with it or go near post, and so he was trying to get it up over him. So I think he did a great job there.
I also think, for me personally, this is another statement performance of a player who wants to make his impact on the league, wants to be a dominant goalkeeper within the league. And I'm going to say it now, I think this is an early shout for Golden Glove here. I really think that with the defensive performances the Battery are capable of putting in, the shielding ability of this midfield with the explosiveness of our attack, I don't think he's going to be facing many shots. So Golden Glove for me.
Yeah, and Matt, I think we called it a podcast or two ago with Adam, that, you know, for him, for any awards that he's going to win this year, you know, solo awards coming out from his goalkeeping position, it's only going to be the Golden Glove, because he's not facing many shots or having too many saves per game, but it's going to be keeping those clean sheets and keeping the ball out of the net for us, and that's the award he's going to get for the season. And I do love that shout, because I think he'll grab that award this year.
Now, is this going to bring us a little more confidence from, like, flying high for the past couple weeks and, like, scoring a bunch of goals and winning? Is this going to bring a little more confidence back to the Battery Stadium for our next game?
It's 5 goals a game now.
Like, they definitely want to score, right? Like, we just went on the road, we didn't score, and we're going home. Mm-hmm. Burn marks and all, we want to score in front of our fans.
Tuesday nights are, we're at home against Louisville City, and kickoff is at 7. They're on a 4 win streak. They are flying high. So let's talk about how we can deal, what our predictions are, what we feel is going to happen on Tuesday night.
I feel like it's going to be a strong home set again, but I'm not going to go large on this one. I think it's going to be a 2-1, where Markanić is going to get it out in the last minute. I think he's a little pissed off that he didn't get his 4th game in a row with a goal, because the kid's on fire. So I think he's really going to shine in this one, and he's going to prove to everyone why he should still be in the MLS right now.
I have a little bit of a different perspective. I think, as much as I want the Battery to win this game, and I think it is out there to be grabbed, I'm going to go with a 1-0 loss, possibly even more. I think this could be maybe even 2-0. They have 7 different goal scorers. Their top goal scorer, Wilson Harris, has 7 this season with a hat trick in his previous game. He's on fire. I think this is going to be a really tough match. But again, if the Battery can get past this, this is the test. This is, can you be the best in your division?
Yeah, Louisville coming into this game, they're coming in hot, scoring 10 goals in the last 2 games and only conceding 3. I see them putting in another 2 goals in early. Battery are going to have to fight back into it. And I see us coming away with a 2-2 tie at home, preserving the unbeaten record.
What is Louisville's modus operandi? Are they possession team, over the top team?
They're a very interesting team. They like to counter. They will hit on the counter. They have not had the golden share of possession once this year. So they do sit off the ball a little bit. And with that, allows a bunch of different players to spring forward into attack for them.
They know how to make runs. They know how to make those cutting runs and those dangerous deep threat runs. And especially when you make those types of plays, when you create that type of space, the most dangerous part on the field is not the space that you're creating going forward. It's actually the space that you're creating up underneath of yourself. And that's what Louisville exploits in our, and the teams that they played against. And that led to, you know, them scoring 10 goals in the last two games.
Is this something where we finally see Archer making a start for us, because we'll have that defensive leadership in the center to kind of cover our outside backs who have been playing off their ass all season long, but just knowing someone's there to back. But it sounds like it's almost like the Miami game, where you could definitely tell we missed that leadership role in the center. Obviously for the one goal, but like for their, it was all counterattack with them. And it sounds like if we have him back there again, we're just going to go ahead and that everyone else is going to gain the confidence as well.
I think we do have that leadership back there. Who we don't talk about, which I think sometimes is a good thing in the defense, is Smith, right? He's that other back, the center back there. Palma, we talked a lot about back and forth. He went off. I don't know if he was injured, and that's when Archer come on. Smith, we'll see how Smith and Archer get along and see how they can work that center back pairing that we need to help lead from as both of them.
Absolutely. I mean, center backs are crucial for any team trying to progress and be a dominant force. And I just want to go quickly to Louisville's head coach, Danny Cruz. He got this job in 2021. This is his first coaching job, but now the team's been able to work with him for 3 years, implement his play style for 3 years. They're well-drilled. They're well-coached. And I think you look at, you know, this is a guy who has a plethora of experience in the MLS in his playing career. He knows what it takes to win those tough games. And I think this, you know, we talked about the games that the Battery would have circled. This is one that I think Danny Cruz would have circled for Louisville. This is a must win game. So I think we're going to see disruptions again. We're going to see a little bit of time wasting, and we're going to be hit really hard on the counter.
Well, you can't forget, too, that the Battery are the reason why Louisville didn't reach to the USL final last year. You know, if Louisville would have beaten us last year, they would have hosted the final. So, you know, that is on the tip of their head for going into this game. And it definitely should be with the year they're starting out with right now. It is a revenge tour for them. Coming into Patriots Point and the Yellow Wall, we're here to defend it, and we're here to send you packing.
I think that's a great point. A couple things I want to back up on. One, where do we get the Battery parka that Coach Peterman was wearing, just in case it gets cold here in South Carolina? Number two, shout out to Bobby coming to every match at Edmunds Oaks, always coming up saying a great word to me. Appreciate it. Hey, this is a great way to start out the season. Appreciate y'all. I think we're going to do a little pregame in the parking lot.
See us in the yellow lot.
Go check out the regiment. We're in the yellow lot. We'll be wandering around. Go down and look at the blue lot. That's where the regiment's got things going on. I'm sure they're going to have some food and some drinks down there. Don't be afraid. Go talk to them. Go give them a hug. We need everybody to show up, because this is our home match against Louisville, and we need everybody there to support our players and make that place the big yellow wall, like Ryan likes to call it. Until Tuesday, peace.
Feel the thunder, be the fate of Charleston, come to put you under. Ooh.